this week, gold wrapped up its fifth winning week in a row, while equities investors took some profits off the table. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be back with you this weekend for another edutainment-packed show. In this GoldSeek.com radio installment, top money manager Louis Navalier joins me. He manages $8 billion in bonds and equities. But now, it's the precious metals that have caught his attention. He recently turned bullish on the sector, adding a new fund to his repertoire, Navalier Gold. Then the prophet of disaster joins the show. Gerald Celente thinks Fed tapering is merely a ploy to distract the masses. A new round of economic stimulus, i.e. quantitative easing, will be the impetus, sending the precious metals much higher. Gold should be over $2,000, he says, when inflation is included. As interest rates climb, currencies will implode, forcing investors into the safe haven investment class. And you won't want to miss Robert Ian's latest must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the Market Weather Report. Visibility was virtually unlimited over the gold indexes this week. The yellow metal finished its fifth winning week in a row, the longest winning streak in a year, on the heels of a powerful sell-off in the dollar and the equities exchanges. This month, gold has leaped 5% on robust global demand for coins, bars, and jewelry. That's good news, considering 2013 was the worst year since 1981. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, the yellow metal added $15, finishing around $12.69 an ounce. Silver slid only 50 cents, ending around $19.92 an ounce, just shy of $20. Platinum dropped about 28, down 2%, finishing the week near $14.28, due in part to a worker strike in South Africa. Platinum mining froze at the world's three biggest producers as talks over pay disputes are expected until next week. Palladium dropped about $14, down about 2%, closing near $7.34 an ounce. And West Texas Intermediate crude blasted higher by nearly 3%, finishing the week just shy of $97 a barrel. Topping the list of bullish factors for gold, money flows from the global equities markets pullback, which led to safe haven buying. The All-Country World Equities Index suffered its worst blow since last summer on sluggish economic numbers in China and concerns that the Fed will continue tapering at next week's meeting slated for January 28th through 29th. In response to the worse-than-expected manufacturing figure, China's bank regulator issued a new requirement for regional offices to increase specific regulation. China's Flash Purchasing Managers Index fell under 50, the worst reading in 6 months, suggesting sluggish manufacturing. That's the backbone of the economic miracle. This fact alone likely explains the sluggishness in the silver market, despite the explosive move in gold this week. Elsewhere, rumors that Indian officials could lift the gold import restriction, effectively lowering import duties, embolden some bullish investors. Nevertheless, China has officially surpassed the nation in terms of gold consumption now, partly due to purchases in panda coins, gold bars, and jewelry, which is soaring according to a GFMS gold survey. Chinese demand increased 32% over the past 12 months, up about 1,200 tons last year. That's about a 400% increase in 10 years, according to a Financial Times report. The bulk of sales came from 24-karat gold purchases. That's investment grade and not jewelry. Currently, the nation of Turkey also mints the world's largest number of gold coins, with Beijing in second place. Besides becoming the world's biggest gold consumer, China is now officially the world's largest gold producer, 437 tons annually. That's roughly 10% of the entire global output. The Chinese Lunar New Year is also an important demand component here for physical demand. Gold remains a favorite traditional holiday gift. And with good reason, most items lose value as soon as they're purchased and then received, whereas gold and silver tend to appreciate as our currencies are devalued. Elsewhere, gold ETFs experienced inflows for the first time in nearly 6 months, an increase of $33 million. So far this year, junior gold miners have also climbed substantially, one article showing 17% to date via the Market Vectors Junior Gold Miners ETF, ticker symbol GDXJ. In addition, the Gold Bullion Spider ETF experienced a big spike of investment inflows, another positive for the sector. Gold ETFs on Friday recorded the best daily inflow since October of 2012, according to Commerzbank analysts. Talk of a gold market short squeeze continues to work its way around the blogosphere. McNeil Curry, a head of global technical strategy of Bank of America and Merrill Lynch, believes a squeeze is imminent, noting the key resistance point of 1270. A breach of that level could send the metal soaring another $100 to $150. Analysts at RBC concur, calling for a close over 1275 an ounce as the potential trigger, sending the metal higher. And then friend of the show Peter Schiff issued an alert this week, noting investors should not fear the Fed. The CEO and chief global strategist of Euro-Pacific Capital says that Fed tapering is already baked into the market cake. I share his sentiments. If anything, the market has likely overreacted on the downside, especially given that some market watchers expect the Fed to maybe even reverse taper and increase QE later this year. And given the economic chaos unfolding in Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, much of South America, as well as in the Ukraine, it just makes it all the more likely that Fed officials might steer clear of tapering. Schiff is calling for gold to be the trade of the year, and it certainly is so far, but 1 month is 11 short of a year, so it might not quite yet be prudent to start counting our hatchlings. He does make an interesting observation that if tapering continues, the domestic economy could implode, but I would note that EU ministers noted this week that economic conditions are improving, the recession has passed, and QE will be curtailed. Bottom line on precious metals. Well, the gold rally was impressive this week. Nevertheless, the fate of investors appears, at least in the near term, to rest on the shoulders of the Federal Reserve. If Dr. Yellen announces further tapering in the monthly bond purchasing program, it could stop the dollar deluge. The weekly gold and silver charts seem to hold the key to what's coming next, so be sure to log in to your Alpha Stocks newsletter for the Monday forecast. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, heavy cloud cover appeared over the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrials fell sharply, 579 points, off 3.5%, ending at 15,879 by Friday's close. The S&P 500 gave back about 48 points, ending at 1390, down 2.5%, while the Nasdaq fared best, off only 69 points, 1.5% at 41.28. Investors sold stocks heavily on Thursday and Friday in the wake of the weak manufacturing data from China and Fed tapering talk. The S&P 500 suffered its worst one-week percentage decline in 6 months, while the Dow, its worst in a year and a half. The intense volatility of the emerging markets and their related currencies can be directly traced to the last FOMC meeting, where Fed governors agreed for the first decrease in monthly toxic real estate purchases, mortgage-backed securities, i.e. QE, in years. Emerging market currencies fell sharply, plunging the hardest in 5 years. Trouble in Argentina due to its peso devaluation. The Turkish lira also fell sharply. The Ukraine currency dropped to a four-year low amid civil unrest. And of course, the South African rand weakened amid labor disputes. The loss of confidence in emerging market growth could force a readjustment of corporate profits, some of which hinges on the robust sales in developing economies. Bottom line on Wall Street. While the selling this week was intense, it really does appear to be an overreaction. At least at first blush, the fear level is remarkably high in our 7-component sentiment index. In just 1 week, investor sentiment has shifted from somewhat greedy to sheer terror. This is simply not, in my opinion, how most bull markets end. On the contrary, if this was the market zenith, I'd expect complacency. The opposite is occurring here. Investors are, well, simply terrified. So be sure to log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account for all of next week's stock picks and forecasts. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Gerald Celente and Louis Navalier. We'd like for you to stay with us here. Well, Louis Navalier is editor of four leading stock advisory newsletters, including Louis Navalier's Quantum Growth, Emerging Growth, Global Growth, and the Blue Chip Growth. Hello, sir.
It's great to be on your show again.
You've noted here in one of your recent reports that the equities trend now is a bit of a wild card, so it's particularly important for investors to pay attention to the sectors where they're looking for potential stock candidates. Some will be outperforming while others underperforming. Which sectors do you expect to shine here early on in the new year?
You know, that's a fascinating question you have. The only sector that was up this year when we started this year was energy. Yet both my mutual funds were in the top 1% early in the year, and I had hardly any energy stocks. So we really think the sectors are breaking down, and we think it's all stock picking now, and it's all who has the best earnings. Because what's going on is these earnings coming out now are the best in almost 3 years for the S&P. And the catalyst other than the proven economy is really a weak dollar. You see, the when the dollar was strong, it was pinching corporate profits. But now it's at a two-year low against the euro, a one-year low against 15 major currencies. It's fueling windfall profits on the overseas business because almost half the S&P's earnings are outside of the United States. So I'm very excited because this is really becoming a stock-picking market. Now, with that said, tech is doing better than, you know, utilities, and but the sector trends are very unclear this year.
You also go on to say that the Federal Reserve might not be quite as market supportive because we're starting to see an end to tapering, and this could lead to a separating of the wheat from the chaff, which you've already alluded to, more of a stock picker's market. How do you see the Fed operating in the new year? Will they be as hawkish as some folks are expecting?
Well, first of all, there's going to be two hawks voting this time versus one. So you're going to have, instead of, you're going to have 9-1 votes. Instead of 9-1 votes, you're going to have 8-2. And Mr. Fisher wanted, the Dallas Fed president, he wanted to trim by $20 billion a month, and they're trimming by $10 billion a month. So they're going to be pushing to wind it down more. What may cause the Fed to hesitate was the December payroll report. Now, personally, that very poor payroll report we had in December was probably due to seasonal adjustments. The real people that do payroll, ADP, had found a lot more jobs. The winter weather is distorting the jobs number through February, to be honest with you, and they're having those horrible storms, you know, in the Northeast and some in the Midwest. So I think what's going to be happening is the Fed is going to be very accommodative. Janet Yellen is a dove, but she's a very serious dove. She's a data-driven dove. And I think she will wind down the quantitative easing, but not as fast as it would have happened under Bernanke. The other thing that's odd is I think the Fed's going to lower their unemployment target. You know, unemployment plunged in December, not because of job creation, was very poor. It plunged because the people keep disappearing off the workforce. We're at a 35-year low on worker participation, and the average work week is quite low. And in 2013, the payroll report showed 400,000 more jobs than the broader household survey. Because when kids got two temp jobs, they were counted twice. So there's some bad data in the Department of Labor data, and I think the Fed knows this. They've talked about it, and but I do think they will wind things down, but a little slower under Janet Yellen.
A lot of startling statistics being thrown around, some of them I think more reliable, few people really trusting the mainline numbers emerging from the Labor Department and the BLS. With folks dropping out of the labor force, the participation rate is one metric that folks are looking at, which is, you know, really been in a downward trend now ever since the last recession.
You know, we're just not hitting on all cylinders. And I don't trust any of the government data. I'll give you just another division of the government, retail sales. You know, I recommend Home Depot and Lowe's, and they had the strongest sales since 1998, okay? I mean, the best in like 15 years. And if you read the Department of the Commerce Department, they say that the sales of home improvement stores are falling. Well, then how come Home Depot and Lowe's have record results? I mean, don't they dominate the home improvements business? it's just bizarre. You know, we call it earth to the government. I mean, I think we ought to buy them a computer every now and then. And, you know, it's just odd. And there's, you know, and then you hit states like California, where you got 25% of the citizens don't even have bank accounts. And you say, do you think they're part of the cash economy? And, you know, I'll give you another story. I sold the division of my management company. When we sold it, it was about $1.6 billion in assets, 10,000 accounts. We told the people in that division, go work for the people we sold it to. You know, they'll give you a job. Well, one of my guys went straight to disability. Now, this guy's an ex-USC football jock. Got two national championship rings, still benches 340 pounds. He used to bench a lot more. And he's on disability. He chose to get disability versus work. So there's a lot of weird things going on in the labor market right now. And there's just a lot of temp work out there. You know, it's fascinating.
Well, let's move on now to a recent statistic from the government last week. Of course, the Labor Department discussed our recent price situation, and the producer price climbed one of the biggest monthly increases in quite some time. You mentioned energy stocks performing well. You know, energy prices also increasing sharply. What are your thoughts here on inflation and inflation-related investments like the precious metals?
It's all tied to the dollar. When the dollar's strong, commodity prices go down. When the dollar gets weak, as it's now getting weak, commodity prices bubble up. That's why gold's had a good start to the year. Now, you get the seasonality, you know, the cows have had gone to slaughter early because it was cold, and, you know, we have the lowest inventory of cows in 60 years, and, you know, the pigs got sick, and, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, but the feed costs are down, and I like Tyson Foods. They dominate that business. Gold's fascinating. When we did the deal with Iran and we took the sanctions off of them and we gave them $8 billion back that we had frozen, we created the gold market because Iran was selling oil in exchange for gold to get around the sanctions, especially with Turkey. And now they get paid in dollars. So I think gold's a good buy. I think it has to build a better base, okay? But, you know, essentially the metals do well when confidence in the central banks drop. And confidence in central banks are pretty high in the world because they've all been pumping. But the reason that there's been some selling our treasuries is coming from other central banks. Apparently, they just don't respect us like they used to. And whether that's right or wrong, and there has been an emerging market crisis, there's been a lot of the rise in our treasury yields is coming from central bank selling of our treasury securities. So as the confidence in the Fed drops and the dollar gets weaker, then the commodity prices firm up, especially metals prices.
I'd like to move on to the fiscal cliff, the fiscal deal that was passed late last year to reopen the government and circumvent our debt limit. Of course, this impending reset, they pushed it back again. Limit, or whether it's just going to be a non-event.
It's going to be a non-event. It's going to be a non-event because it's an election year. Obviously, they're trying to get turnout up. That's what the inequality thing is all about. Because you know, when you have a midterm election, it's good for Republicans and it's bad for Democrats. So they're trying to get this inequality thing going, so everybody shows up and votes and get everybody riled up. It's working. They're at Davos, Switzerland, talking about it right now. But the fact of the matter is that nothing's going to happen. As far as President Obama's concerned, he can just do executive orders. So, you know, it's unfortunate that that the executive branch and Congress aren't working together. But that's just where we're at right now.
You know, this talk about economic growth when we see higher than normal unemployment figures. Can the Fed actually continue with tapering? We're returning to tapering for a moment. If we have higher unemployment, the inflation numbers are relatively tame. It would seem to me that they have plenty of wiggle room here for further stimulus, quantitative easing, and it would be a bit reckless.
The reason is 3% GDP growth is back, and the reason it's back is, you know, we grew at 4.1 in the third quarter. Fourth quarter is looking at 3. The trade deficit's got a lot better, and the trade deficit's got more and more narrow. It's fueling GDP growth. Now we get distortions in GDP. You know, we had an inventory surge in the third quarter. We had the great trade number in the fourth quarter. And so if you look at consumer spending, they're not driving the economy now like they normally do. So that's why people don't feel it. It's coming from extraordinary items. But the bottom line is, as we get closer and closer to 3% GDP growth, it'll, I think I think they'll continue to taper. Their biggest problem is the double counting of the temp jobs. You know, I did an event at Capitol Grill for a UBS dinner, and we were surveying the wait staff, and no one had a full-time job. And that's because it's darn restaurants, and they don't want a full-time job because they want to buy them health care. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how what's really going on. I know there's slack in the workforce. Obviously, some people got in the wrong degrees, and we can go on, and or they might live in the wrong state, you know. Obviously, there's an unemployment problem in Texas and things like that. North Carolina is a good case study. Mr. Governor McElroy, he actually cut benefits, so everybody was forced to go get a job, and unemployment fell. It's very interesting how it works. You know, I'm just amazed. You know, again, I'm from California, so I'm very cynical, but I'm amazed that you can get a disability from acute stress from commuting, because a doctor was saying, oh, if you can't commute anymore. I'm amazed that I can lay off a guy who's, you know, very healthy, goes to the gym, and he gets disability. He gets extra because he has four kids. You know, I mean, I'm just amazed. You know, it's... You know, I guess if everybody does it, they think you should. They should do it too. So it's, but in some states that would be frowned upon. Other states, it's embraced. So, well, welcome to America.
Interesting statistic this morning showed that roughly 20% of American households are now using food stamps to keep food on the dinner table. How does this factor into your analysis?
I have a home in Florida, and the people that solicit the seniors for food stamps, I have to sign up $150 a month, otherwise they will lose their job. So that's the deal. Hand it out or lose it. And that just is going to promote fraud, because worst case, they'll hand it out to someone that shouldn't get it. Well, you know, people grow up in certain societies and cultures, and, you know, if your parents were on aid, then you're more likely you're going to be on aid. And, of course, you know, the whole goal is for people to move up and assimilate and grow and prosper. And, you know, but obviously... You know, some people say, oh, I might as well get it. Everybody's getting it. So it's very sad what goes on. But, you know, like, I spent a lot of time in Alabama. I don't see this in Alabama, okay? Everybody's working there. They've got six auto plants. The whole place is booming. I go back to California, it's like everybody does it, you know. It's really sad. It's truly, truly sad. So, and obviously they're trying to get seniors to do it, and seniors vote. They throw in free money at seniors. So it's quite fascinating.
What sectors, what stocks, what particular industries look good in the next few weeks and months, please?
Well, first of all, I want everybody to know the earnings coming out now are the best in 3 years. And earnings are going to improve every quarter this year. And the one thing the market was missing, earnings, is finally back. So I'm very bullish. But I'm bullish predominantly because of my stock. So we like things like Tyson Foods. We have airlines. We have Delta and Southwest. I mean, they're gouging the tickets. Just look at what's going on. And there's been a lot of consolidation. They have monopolistic routes. We like Thermo, TMO. It's an instrument company, disposable instruments. We like some great pharmaceuticals like Jazz Pharmaceuticals, VRX, another pharmaceutical company. You know, it's all we... And we have a lot of great Chinese stocks. DL, which is an education company in China. QIHU, which is internet on the mobile devices, very, very dominant. VIPS, V-I-P-S, internet retail in China. So, you know, it's interesting what's going on, but all I want to find is hotspots and grow with it. I don't have to pay a premium for growth nowadays. I'm very excited. And money's pouring in the market because interest rates go up, bond investors lose money. It's a very good market. If I had to pick one sector, I'd pick pharmaceuticals over everything. But I like Johnson & Johnson. I'm not crazy about Merck. So, you know, I think it's becoming more of a stock market and less of a sector market. But with that said, you know, it's just going to be a wonderful year. And it's just going to get more narrow. As the market is higher, you get fewer leaders. And that's all that's happening now.
Please tell folks more about the Nevalier services.
Well, we manage several $1 billion and all, but I think we like people to start with our newsletters to get to know us. At Nevalier.com, our management company, there is a free weekly market mail people can sign up for. We also have free stock rating on our Nevalier.com and my newsletter site, NevalierGrowth.com. Full access to my entire database of 5,000 stocks online, available free. You know, key in your stocks, save your portfolio. It's updated every week automatically. We have quantitative and fundamental grading. We like to blend them both. We're known as a good risk-adjusted manager. When there's dips in the market, we seem to do well. We're off to a great start this year. Both our funds are top 10%. So we're very proud that we're up when the market isn't. So it's going to be a great year. But, you know, I have earnings, so I have confidence.
Excellent. Well, please keep up the great work and continued success.
Great, great.
With a number of alarming trends converging on the nation right now, who better to have on the show than Gerald Celente, the director of the Trends Research Institute? His team produces the Trends Journal. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Thanks for having me.
You discuss in your latest Trends Journal some threats facing the nation, and you share a quote from one of the national founders, John Adams. There's nothing which I dread so much as a division of the republic into two great parties.
And I guess he shouldn't use the word great. I mean, it's two disgusting parties, as I see it, and they're the only ones having a party. And, you know, I'm a political atheist, so I only look at things what they are and not how they should be. I don't tell anybody what to think. And but when you look at the facts, I mean, look at the last year. You know, there was the debt ceiling crisis. The year before that, it was going over the fiscal cliff. And then, of course, there's Obamacare. I mean, it's right in front of everybody's eyes, a gross government failure of a magnitude like we've never seen domestically, except when we look at the foreign wars and the waste of our money going overseas, and you could see another aspect of it. And then looking again at Congress, you know, I just came up with a line today, actually. Anybody that looks up to politicians looks down upon themselves. And when you look at the politicians, again, there's nothing, unless you could tell me, anything that Washington has done that we could look at and say, wow, great job, well done. Whether it's, again, as I said, the wars, Obamacare, how about the war on terror? That was a beauty, wasn't it? Oh, I forgot, they closed down the government for 2 weeks in 2003. And now look at the hypocrisy. You see all of these people that have lost so much, been thrown into jail for how long, and now there are all of these states legalizing marijuana, you know, when they were busting everybody's chops for this stuff for so long. But I got an idea. Let's legalize it, and this way we could tax it and make a profit on it, because that's all it ever comes down to. Just like when I was a kid growing up in the Bronx, they used to bust people for running the numbers. Now you got to be in lotto. You got to be in it to win it, because the government got a cut of it. No, this is criminal activity.
You talk about John Adams fearing, you know, bipartisan Congress, and of course, Jefferson feared the corporatocracy. I know you'll remember him talking about giant corporations swallowing the country, as well as the Federal Reserve, a central bank in charge of fiat money printing. So how do we unshackle ourselves from the situation, or is it too late?
It's not too late. You know, again, look at the people. I mean, you could call them by name. Look at this clown we got over here across the river over here in New Jersey, Christie. I mean, look at these people. And the morons, you know, I always say that politicians are the same people you couldn't stand in high school that wanted to become class president or head of the student council, and they just followed their dream. And then when you look behind the Christie scandal, it was two high school kids, this woman and this guy, you know, that came up with this scheme about closing down the George Washington Bridge, you know, to get even with the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, the pettiness. It's that, that is all it is. Look at this Gates book, you know, and again, you know, to me, you know, he's as bad as the rest of them, but he, you know, he tells you about what's going on in the White House. These are kids. They're kids in charge. They're sociopaths and psychopaths. Is it too late? Not if we, the people, say it's not. And again, you know, it's up to us to create the future. And by the way, I believe America's future could be created through a self-sufficiency economy. I have a dish in front of me over here. I turned it upside down. My Aunt Zizzy left it to me. May I so rest in peace, a bunch of stuff. It's made in Syracuse, New York. I remember when they used to make fine glassware in West Virginia. You know, we used to make out, before NAFTA, we had over 500,000 plus textile jobs. Now we got a little over 100,000. Now, self-sufficient economy, we're 315 million people strong, and we're very rich in mineral resources, natural resources, and human resources. So we could turn it around, but not as long as the gang is in charge. It's simple as that. We don't have to do this. You know, look at the people that are leading us. Again, anyone to me looking up to these politicians are looking down upon themselves. So when people rise to the courage and dignity and self-respect, we don't have to live like this anymore. You know, like take food stamp spending. You know, it's more than doubled since 2008.
Did you read that article today? In Appalachia, you know, unemployment is reaching as high as 40%. Few people are aware of this. And, you know, Appalachia makes a huge portion of the East Coast here. Folks are taking, let's say, their $500 EBT card. They go in, they buy several cases of soda. Okay, whatever soda brand is hot at the time. They walk out with as many as 20 to 40 cases of soda. They don't buy a lick of food. No Wonder Bread for the kids. They take the sodas down to a secondary establishment, sell them for 50 cents on the dollar. They take the 250 and they're purchasing OxyContin on the market and making an absolute fortune, up to $12 a pill. Now, I'm not trying to cast aspersions. I'm just pointing out how desperate people have become.
Yeah, and again, I say 2008 because that's when the panic of 08 hit. I mean, there are people that are out of work that don't want to be. And again, look at the money that we're waiting. We just built a $13 billion aircraft carrier, the Gerald R. Ford. You know, look at the money, the money that we're still spending on the military. So as the nation is going down, our priorities have been misdirected. So as we're looking ahead, we're looking at a very difficult 2014. Here's our forecast for the markets. We're going to continue to see, we believe, another round of tapering. As tapering continues, you're going to start seeing interest rates go up. When interest rates go up, the economy goes down. And it's not only the United States where it's happening. It's happening in the European zone as well. You're seeing interest rates going up, and you're seeing a real pressure on their economy. This was an interest rate recovery because of the trillions of dollars dumped into the system and record low interest rates by the Federal Reserve. So when tapering happens again, interest rates go up, the economy goes down, you're going to start seeing panic on the streets. And when that happens, we believe they're going to come out with another round of what they'll call a new name for quantitative easing, because after all, we have a new Fed chairman, Yellen, coming in. So when that happens, that's when you're going to see gold and silver prices, we believe, go up when the next round of easing following the second round of tapering happens.
You also suggest that our legislators must first be dedicated to their constituents, and then and only then should their allegiances to the political party be established.
Yes, I believe that anyone that's a member of a political party has no right running for office. And that's because that's who their allegiance is to. And the allegiance is supposed to be to we the people. So if your allegiance is first to a party, you have no place being in office. So I recommend, again, in how to turn things around, that you should be automatically disqualified from running for office. And I also believe, actually, there was an election, state elections in India very recent, and out of nowhere came the Common Man Party. And the platform, again, that they're running against corruption. Yeah, guess what? What do we have? Over half of our congressmen and congresswomen are millionaires. I mean, they're not representing us. And so with the Common Man Party, part of the platform is direct democracy. And this is what they do in Switzerland. Now, remember, people say you can't do direct democracy in the United States because, you know, we're a lot bigger than Switzerland. Listen, this is India, and they got a billion people. If they could pull it off, we could pull it off with 316 million people. So with a direct democracy is that on every major issue, the people vote on it. You want to go to war? Let the people vote. I don't need some clown in Washington, some little chicken hawk, or some woman telling me, you know, they've never fought a day in their life to tell me we have to go to war against another country. Let the people vote. You want to bail out banks? Let the people vote. And then people say, well, that would be mob rule. And I say, well, you got a mob rule now. You got 535 congressmen and senators. Yeah, telling the rest of us what to do. That's the gang. So, yeah, a gang of 535. So I say, let the people vote. And so too are the Indian people. They are saying they want direct democracy. So I believe that's the way to turn things around.
Well, you know, I'd also like to talk about the entitlement government that's risen up around our nation. Talk about returning to transparency and protecting the rights of each citizen. You stand up to this system. It means standing up to the people and telling them, no, you can't have more free goodies. Now that this precedent has been set, the moral hazard, I think, is set in stone. And that amounts then to political suicide if you administer the antidote, which is less spending and less free stuff.
It can be done. And again, look at, let's call it what it is as well on the other side. Obama came out with his new plan of promise zones, and you see them all over the country. And you want, you're a big corporation, you can come in. I'll tell you what we're going to do there, Chris. You're a big guy. You're going to create jobs. We're going to give you tax breaks, loan guarantees, and infrastructure repairs. Hey, wait a minute. This is America. Why are you giving these people these breaks? So whether it's at the top or the bottom, you know, the bottom's chump change compared to the ripoff at the top. So I say none of any of it. And but they, and again, I have my master's degree, by the way, when they counted, actually, back when you get a job with one, I got it in 1970. It was in public administration, and I remember when they were creating all of these these economic zones and also these kind of deals where they would create benefits for corporations. Look what's going on now in South Carolina. I mentioned before about our, we used to have textile jobs here. Now they're bringing in companies from India and China and giving them loan guarantees and all these different kind of breaks to create textile jobs. The same thing with the auto. They're bringing in auto industries from Japan and other countries and providing them with breaks. So it's, the whole system is corrupt. And these people aren't economic development agencies. You know, they don't create anything. You look at every study that's been done, and the only, and the same thing in Detroit. They're building all of these things for the soccer teams and football teams and on, and giving everybody breaks to billionaires to do them. So no, and they don't, study after study shows that the people that benefit are the ones with the, get the breaks, and everybody, and taxpayer loses. It has been going on for decades. So yeah, it's up and down the line.
You note that people under the age of 25 have a 40% unemployment rate around the globe, and real wages are just simply not there. That translates into, well, no home, no mortgage, no family, and even poverty. Talk about the lack of opportunity for young folks today.
It's predatory multinationalism. Again, you go back, you know, when I was a kid, they had these little things called pharmacies, and they were owned by the local, you know, person, you know, drugstore. And now you have, you know, CVS and Walgreens and Rite Aid taking all the action. They had these other little quaint things called stationery stores. No more. Now you have Staples and Office Depot taking all the action. They had hardware stores. No more. Now you got Home Depot and Lowe's. And you go up and down the line. Whether it's agriculture, you look at every level of business, it's been taken over by the multinationals. Look at the housing in the United States just in 2013. $20 billion worth of real estate has been bought up by private equity groups like Blackstone. This is unprecedented. And what are they doing with the houses? They're renting them out. So it's a multinational takeover. It's predatory multinationalism. And again, you had laws in place that prevented this from happening before. You had the Robinson-Patman Act, Sherman Antitrust Act, Clayton Antitrust Act, and of course in banking, Glass-Steagall. So I'm in favor of regulations, just like I'm in favor of, you know, laws that protect copyright infringement. And how about slavery? You know, that was a nice law they put in place not to have that one. So, yeah, I'm in favor. Look at what's going on in West Virginia. Look what's going on around the country with this latest chemical spill, you know, in the Elk River. And I went to school, by the way, in West Virginia, in the Kanawha Valley. They used to call it Chemical Valley. Used to wake up in the morning, and the air was actually a yellow-green, and the stink and the poisons in the air, you know, were intolerable. And I was in West Virginia for 6 years, so I know the place really well. And I see this paradise on earth that has been destroyed with mountaintop mining and chemical pollution. So we need laws, but we don't need ones that are for just us, the little people, while they give the big guys all the free rides. So I say put back in place the laws that Teddy Roosevelt and others fought for, that protected us and gave us all an equal shot at entrepreneurism and the gold ring or the brass ring that used to be available to everyone in America.
We've really got to separate banking from investment banking. If we didn't learn the lesson in the Great Depression, I mean, hopefully we learned it in 2008, 2009 during the credit crisis. By dissolving the Glass-Steagall Act, I mean, we essentially removed some important separation between the issuance of stock, the speculation with other people's money. I posted an article today showing that over half of U.S. mortgages are still underwater. Do you point out in the Trends Journal that foreclosure rates, you expect them to spike again during the next economic crisis? Please tell us why.
It's an interest rate recovery. And you already look, you know, you're looking at, you know, the 30-year fixed is up over 100 basis points. And then Wall Street says, well, it's still relative, you know, it's still low in comparison historically. Well, yeah, but that's a different scenario, because you also had a country where people's income was going up. But since the panic of 08 happened, median household income has declined, you know, over 8.5%. So when the mortgage rates go up, and you're also seeing young people not being able to go into the market, and first-time home buyers were the ones who were driving the marketplace. So what we're saying is that when interest rates go up, the housing market goes down. Retail sales collapse, particularly in auto. You have 0% financing, 0% down, and 0% interest rates going on. This is unprecedented. So what we're saying is real estate's not going to be a good buy when interest rates go up, and they're going to have to go up because when the Fed tapers again, that's what you're going to see. You're already seeing it in the 10-year bond. You know, it's all of a sudden it flirted over 3%, and you're going to start seeing them go up again. So that's what we're saying. That's why we're saying it, because of Fed policy. This is unprecedented, these record low interest rates. When I was a kid, they used to have these things called savings accounts. People used to buy certificates of deposit and savings, and they used to get 4-5% back. Now what are you getting? You're getting what? A quarter or 1% back.
But you also say that this, of course, has led to unsustainably high currencies that eventually will implode, leading to the best safe haven. And you say that's gold.
Yeah, again, you're seeing it going on in China. They're faced with a crisis as well with their lending system, shadow banking, they call it. We, again, you know, from the Bronx, we used to call it loan sharks, and people are paying 40-50% interest because they have to keep the scam going, and the Chinese government's trying to pull back on it. You see a bubble, a housing bubble going on over there, real estate bubble, and they can't stop it. And you're looking at the yuan, for example, it's up like, oh, it's what, 16% against the dollar over the last few years, expected to rise again 2-3%. So you have all this implosion going on that's going to happen. Same thing in the ECB, with the European Central Bank. You know, they've just been flooding money in to keep it going. So we're going to see, again, the key in all of this is interest rates. When the interest rates go up, You're going to start seeing currency wars. Just look what's going on in the emerging markets. The emerging markets lost 5% last year. They're down already this year, down 3%, because of all of the hot money that flowed in because of the stimulus programs, the cheap money. So we can see the future. It's being written in the word interest rate. And again, it's very important to understand this. And you don't have to believe me. Believe Andrew Husser. And here's a quote from him. This guy, he calls it Confessions of Quantitative Easer. And remember, this is coming from the Wall Street Journal, not, you know, the progressive website, you know, the World Socialist website. Quote, "I can only say I'm sorry, America. As a former Federal Reserve official, I was responsible for executing the centerpiece program of the Fed's first plunge into the bond-buying experiment known as quantitative easing. The central bank continues to spin QE as a tool for helping Main Street, but I've come to recognize the program for what it is, the greatest backdoor Wall Street bailout of all time." It comes from the Wall Street Journal, November 11, 2013.
You know, you're also worried about the national debt ceiling. You say this temporary agreement that Congress has come to is just not solid enough to prevent another crisis. That could be as soon as February 7th, so less than a month away. Plus, you say the deal nearly doubled from the original amount to almost half a trillion dollars.
Well, yeah, again, you know, remember when this whole debt ceiling issue happened, just to show you the fraud behind the whole thing. You know, we had about $16 trillion debt. As soon as they announced the deal, our debt automatically went up to like over $17 trillion. So there's no way out of this. This is just more manipulation. And all they're doing is they're covering up the huge issue in front of us all, and that is there's absolutely no way in the world that the United States is going to be able to pay off a $17 trillion plus and rising debt obligation. It cannot be done. It's impossible. So all they're going to keep doing is covering it up. And so by the time February comes, they'll make another deal. And they're just going to keep raising the debt ceiling until finally it can no longer be covered up. All this is a Ponzi scheme. And the wrong Ponzi and the wrong Madoff, although they both deserve to be jailed, are not being thrown behind bars. And those are the people, again, reading this Andrew Husser quote, it is the Federal Reserve. It's a takeover. And I cannot see why people cannot see that. Again, you know, this isn't, you know, left-wing talk. You know, you can see where all the money is gone. It's funneled into the hands of a few. And again, among the top 0.01%, the average family income in that group, it increased by 76.2% between 2002 and 2012, while over the same period, the average family income of the bottom 90%, the rest of us, decreased by 10.7%.
We have been dumbed down as a society because I believe, and this is just one man's opinion, that the powers that be don't want us to realize the sleight of hand, because your term Ponzi scheme is almost perfect. Whenever you create a currency system based on debt, those at the top of the pyramid, they always get their money. Those that, as you say, the money is funneled to, they will always have their bank accounts and wallets and pocketbooks filled to overflowing. But the rest of us holding the debt at the bottom of the fiat pyramid, we're carrying the whole thing. But you mentioned a gold forecast in the Trends Journal, and you say that, of course, we could run back to that 2000 level. But you also say your long-term upside could be well beyond 2000. I know that's going to pique the interest of this crowd.
Oh, yeah. It could go way beyond that. Because when they go into, look, adjusting for inflation already, you know, gold, when it hit 875 in the trading day back in 1980, adjusting for that, gold should be, you know, well over $2,000 now, about 2,000, almost 3,000, actually, accounting for inflation. So, when they, when, remember, if people say, is gold being manipulated? It's a fact that they manipulated the LIBOR rate. I mean, everybody knows it. It's a fact. And that's, we're talking $700 trillion worth of rigging. Yeah, $700 trillion. Yeah. You know, all the interest rates have been rigged. It's a fact. We know it. They're rigging the Forex, the currency market. It's a fact. We know it. So then when you look at physical demand compared to the paper market, you can see where it's going. Physical demand is still strong throughout Asia and growing. Even in the United States, the Mint reported a very tiny little story, record sales in gold and silver coins. So where is it going? It's, to me, again, when this Ponzi scheme, they're running out of games. The last game was quantitative easing. They're going to have to taper because of all of the dough. Again, you go back to when they, before tapering, what was the Fed was in debt, what? About $800 billion. Now they're over $4 trillion. So now they got to stop this thing, but they're not going to be able to. It's monetary methadone. And they're going to keep juicing it. Now they're hooked on heroin. The methadone don't even work. It's monetary heroin. You know, just to put, I want to put something in perspective. I talked about how, you asked me earlier, how can this be changed? And I said, we have to stop this. One of the things I believe, I'm an American. I believe in what the founding fathers said. And one of the farewell speeches of the farewell speech of Washington, he warned us about not getting involved in foreign entanglements. And so too did and Eisenhower warned us of the military-industrial complex taking over. When Eisenhower made that speech, his farewell address, in 1960, the United States GDP stood roughly at $520 billion. You know what China's was? $60 billion. Now, in 2012, the last numbers, our GDP is at $15 trillion plus. You know what China's is? $8.5 trillion. And the United States debt today, as I mentioned, you know, is well over $17 trillion compared to $2.4 trillion with China. But while we're debt-heavy, China's holding nearly $4 trillion in foreign exchange reserves. And you can see, as I said, what's going on with how they're selling us out and where the future is going. Who would have ever believed that this would have happened? It could only happen because this is, to me, it's very reminiscent, and we wrote about this in last year's Top Trends for 2013, as the beginning of World War II. We have throughout the world inept and incompetent elites that are playing prime minister, chancellor, and president. And we have a banking system that's totally corrupt and in charge. And it's no different than prior to World War I, where you had morons that destroyed the Great War, that destroyed a growing and thriving Europe. And you have the same kind of imbeciles in charge today that are starting wars and losing wars and robbing us of our future. And if the people don't do something to rise up and stand up and regain our rights, you can see where this is headed. There's a revolution going on in Egypt. There's one happening in Turkey. There's every day Yemen, Bahrain. They barely make the news. There's civil wars. There's a civil war in Syria. Oh, you remember that wonderful human rights campaign against Libya, where there are the countries in civil war in Sudan, Somalia, Congo, Central Africa. You have the pitchforks movements going on in Italy. You have the same kind of movements going on in Greece, in Spain, in Portugal. Can't people see what's going on? It's unraveling in front of us. And so when you go back to gold, it's the safe haven.
And I can't help but notice a driving theme throughout almost all of your comments here today. You keep returning to the corrupt banking system. I read an interesting article by this journalist in London, Gillian Tett, I believe, that the banking system is here to serve the individual, to promote business, to extend mortgages, to help promote small businesses, but they're not there to create multi-million dollar bonuses for a handful of elite. I wonder if you could please tell folks more about the Trends Journal. I know that you have some interesting opportunities there for folks who are maybe financially strapped and trying to pick themselves back up. Zeke West sent over a great copy, and I read it from cover to cover. This is a must-read periodical, packed with imagery, graphs, a wonderful group of contributing editors. So let me let you tell more, like Dr. Craig Roberts.
Yeah, well, again, you know, this is history before it happens. There's no magazine like it in the world. It's 52 pages, advertising free. And we also do trends in the news each night, every Monday through Friday at 7:30 Eastern time. So we can put you ahead of the news and on top of the trends. And as you mentioned, it's only $100 a year for the online edition, $185 for the print copy. And we recommend the print copy because, you know, these are going to be collectibles. I mean, you're going to read things. Yeah, I got it in front of me right over here, just by coincidence. I was going through some old files. Dangerous trend. Fed prescribes monetary methadone for stock markets. And this was going on in late 1998. I said, while the American economy is still strong and unemployment low, the Federal Reserve's decision to cut interest rates tarnishes its credibility as impartial arbiter and responsible overseer of the nation's economic well-being. I saw what was going on. I predicted the dot-com bubble. This is just a year before it happened. And again, this was a trend alert. So you really, it was history before it happens. And as I mentioned, you know, we say to keep the hard copies because there's nothing else like it and they're going to be collectibles. But we have a discount request page for people that can't afford the full price. And we try to make it available virtually to everyone so they can prepare for the future and not be misled by what the prostitutes are saying on TV and what the politicians are selling us. And they could seize the opportunities, avoid the dangers, and protect their future.
And you're not afraid to discuss some that were not so close to the mark. And I think that just adds credibility to the periodical.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're human. You know, we do the best we can. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And we don't know what deals are being made that are going to change the game. And they're the wild cards. Hey, how about a Fukushima for you, huh? Oh, what a disgusting thing. That's the biggest cover-up going on in the world and one of the most dangerous things facing all of us.
You know, I have two Geiger counters. Here's one of the little things known, and you're probably aware of this. Radiation is a very, very tricky science. Even many physicists don't fully understand how to take accurate readings. We're regularly hitting Rad 5 levels, which is just off the charts on the West Coast, as well as through the heartland of the United States, all the way up through Alaska. I think this could be an extinction-level event, especially if they don't contain this mess. And at the very least, I would caution people from ever eating any seafood from the Pacific. I really think it could be that bad.
Oh, I'm with you. I won't eat anything. I don't eat any fish, by the way. You know, the poor, I mean, look what just happened again in West Virginia, everywhere. I mean, everything is so polluted.
Gerald Celente, thanks for all the extra time, and we're going to look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Okay, take care.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. The race to the bottom of the economic ladder has begun in earnest. Any hype that has been heard regarding any kind of robust holiday shopping season is beginning to crash and burn. The casualties are enormous, and there are more on the way. As the propaganda of that mythical recovering economy can no longer mask the stark reality of an economy whose better days have come and gone away. On Thursday this week, shares of Best Buy dropped nearly 30% when reports confirmed lackluster holiday sales and a sharp decline in quarterly operating margins. The usual suspects were blamed, including huge discounting by competitors, tight supplies of desirable high-end electronic products, and fewer people shopping. One market analyst said that promotions did not drive sales this year. No kidding. Best Buy lost $4 billion of its market cap in one day. And there's more on the way, as other retailers and businesses fess up about the true nature of the economic outlook, which is bleak at best. The CEO of Best Buy, Hubert Joly, said the overall weakness in consumer electronics came as a big shock. Since becoming CEO in 2012, he's been removing layers of management, eliminating hundreds of jobs, and closing stores. Efficiency is always good. Our longtime listeners will recall a trend I described for the first time on GoldSeek.com radio back in 2008, when I reported on how companies were cutting the fat out of their organizations, things they could ultimately do without. Then they began cutting the meat out of their organizations, which included people, with early retirements, job reductions, and the very incentives that attracted talented workers in the first place. Then they began cutting the bone out of their organizations, which included the very infrastructure that gave them a competitive advantage in the first place. We haven't discussed this trend in some time, but it has been continuing. And now it is going to accelerate. Declines in Sears, Radio Shack, and Toys R Us all followed suit. The bottom line is people are broke. Most have too much stuff already. Stuff gets in the way. Stuff costs money. And most stuff doesn't contribute to happiness. As the economy cuts the fat, the meat, and the bone out of business, all in the name of trying to save money and trying to grow profits against a backdrop of diminishing returns, what remains is an emaciated skeleton of what a healthy economy used to be. Chris, on February 21st and 2nd, I'll be speaking at the 2nd Annual Liberty Mastermind Symposium in Las Vegas, with 15 speakers, 3 panel discussions on one amazing day. Details are on my website, and until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.